Okay, all right, let me make my last point to you, Ms. Gale. Now, Ms. Gale, if I am a, let's say I'm a, I have a team, let's say I have a team of club cricketers, they're going to use that word, and my captaincy are not, it isn't strong enough. The men don't listen to me that kind of way. It is not good enough even when I take the men on the field.
This is you? This is you?
I'm not touching the field properly.
You're speaking about you, or this is metaphorically?
No, I'm speaking about myself.
Oh, right. You're the captain of a cricket team.
That's what I was saying, myself.
Okay.
No, in other words, it's for about like, well, I'm not a good leader. I can't lead 11 men on the field because I can't set the field properly. Ms. Gale, mm-hmm. I'm asking you this last question. I lost the game. Do you think to your mind, honestly, mm-hmm. a good leader has to be a good leader and not a weak leader. Mm-hmm. Not good outside and weak inside.
Yes.
You have to be a leader, not mm-hmm. a leader out there and not in here.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? So therefore then, when we talk about leadership and mm-hmm. we don't have a leader to lead a platoon, you know where I'm going to take that platoon. I got to take that platoon out to the enemy. So mm-hmm. therefore then, I'm saying to myself, Ms. Gill, as you now said, leadership is what counts, not talk. Not talk,
yeah.
Ms. Gill. Leadership is not prediction and pointing fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're a woman, whether you're a man, whether who you are, we don't know because we can't. We always like to point fingers to one another in this world. Jesus never said that because if Jesus' word is, and we know a lot about the Bible, you know, but Jesus tell you that when they're going to stone a woman to death, what he said?
Cast the first stone.
This island always like to persecute one another.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a good leader. There's a bad leader. This woman shouldn't lead. That woman should lead. Miss Gill, I sit down here and listen on the BBC News in Europe. They're having leaders are not. Well, I'm not going to sit on the radio, but they're having leaders are who not. But they are leaders. They came out to be leaders and leading properly. Why we in Bible has got this mentality that I should be Miss Gail and Miss Gail should be Miss John.
Hmm.
We are little children. We know we are school children. So that's the reason why I use the word to the Almighty.
Mm-hmm.
Let him keep checking his poll. I hope he checked the right poll. Thank you very much, Miss Gail.
Thank you, sir. This is Down to Brass Tacks. I would simply say that there are some key elements of leadership that we should look for and seek out in any leader. And at the top of the list will be leaders who are honest and who exhibit integrity. Leaders that have confidence in themselves and that the country can have confidence in them. Leaders who are inspirational. We want someone who inspires us to do better and go farther and develop ourselves. Leaders who are committed and passionate and show that they are for the cause. We want leaders who are good communicators. That's critical. You must be able to tell the story, tell what your vision is so that people can believe in you. And leaders who make decisions. They must have decision-making capabilities, decisions, swift decisions, and decisions that can, you know, advance and mobilize the people. We want leaders that are accountable so that when we query things as a people, ask questions in a democratic system of governance, we can get responses and we, you know, there are some scenarios as we see in the region where after parliament you get a little debriefing. You know, we want leaders who can talk to us and tell us what were some of the decisions and what led to them. Leaders who can delegate, and, you know, we don't want a leader doing everything and everything points to him or whatever. And leaders who can empower. We want leaders who have a certain level of innovation and creativity. And finally, we want leaders who are empathetic. Leaders who have empathy, empathetic. I always struggle with that word, but yes, we want leaders who carry some of those qualities and who can really encourage the people. We need leaders in this country. We need leaders in the region. We need leaders the worldwide. We can see, but you know, the whole world is crying out for good leadership. And yes, we need leaders. That's what I would say. This is Down to Brass Tacks. This is now 11:55. We are almost there, and we will be going towards the regional roundup, and you will hear some of the stories that are taking place in the region. This is Down to Brass Tacks. The time is now 12:13 p.m. on today, Thursday, the 22nd of March, 2018. The call numbers are 434-1790, and the WhatsApp number is 266-4862. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air.
Whoa. 10 minutes of commercial?
This is a radio station, sir.
Commercial? Captain Bob coming in for his 3 minutes, and then you had the woman with the with her floor thing for five minutes.
I guess then you want us to have 1 minute with you then, because is it
that? Yeah, we'll take the minute, and then never. I mean, you want me to call again? That's fine. I mean, 10 minutes of commercial. People are serious.
This is a radio station. Do you know the way how it works?
I actually do know the way it works. But okay. I think 10 minutes is a bit ridiculous, man. Come on, you cannot be
serious.
We
had to hear what's going on regionally. You can't be talking about things only locally. You need to know what's going on.
And then they bring in Captain Bob, and he coming back at the bottom of the hour to say the same thing all over again.
You want to come and advise VOB what they should and shouldn't do?
You really think anybody can advise David Ellis or anything? You really think that's possible? You
want to get to your matter, sir. Good afternoon. This is Down to Brass Tacks. How may we help you?
You're actually helping me know, because the commercials are done. You really want to turn
there
people
are
off
more for your information between now and 2 p.m.
Oh, Lord. Here you go. Well, okay, not before the end of the hour, half hour. And look. And thankfully, Darian King is on court.
Good stuff.
He's the greatest tennis player in the English-speaking Caribbean ever.
Whoa.
You don't ever hear about him, you know. Mm. But if left up to the policies of the Labour parties, people like him, he actually does get support, I suppose, from the present government and stuff. But he had to get there first. Because in this part of the world, you know, the guy was talking about God-given talent. This part of the world, the God-given talent, the only one that counts are the people who can somehow facilitate the merchant class. You know, the advisors and the consultants and the administrators. Anything beyond that, not a plaster Paris foolishness. That don't work in Barbados.
You serious?
The things that you make are not plaster,
they're not of plaster Paris. You have something else. They don't have any value in Barbados.
When you decide to pass through, and you're paying, when you decide to pass through, and they can give you a nice tour and explain to you exactly what the process is and what the agenda for the entire artisan class would be, if given the opportunity to succeed, then perhaps you better have a better appreciation of what it is that we do. Okay? Because art doesn't really sell that well in Barbados. But there's another approach, and that's what we are trying that make happen. But I'm not advertising myself, because I'm not paying for it. Maybe I will do that in a
couple
of weeks.
Right. The people that pay got a chance. So come and tell
me. Yeah, they got a chance,
but
they bore me to death and them boring ads that they got, man. Listen, here's the thing. Okay? Carrie, you were talking about leadership. We need leadership and inspire leadership and all this kind of... I don't agree with anything you have said, to be honest with you. Nothing.
That's okay.
Inspiration is for church. Any church do that kind of thing.
This isn't inspiration, buddy. This is reality. This isn't
exactly.
Inspiration.
Thank you very much.
This
but
is
you said
reality.
You want an inspirational leader. But you know, the truth is...
That's only but leader, one of the...
A leader
one
that
of
can
the...
solve... Yeah, I know. You gave 12 examples. Your last one was inspirational. I mean, okay. Come on. You know, and you talk about they have to be honest you know, you got to be able to measure them in some way, but there's some things that you really can't measure unless you knew the people all your life or something. You have to assess them in their private lives before they become public figures and
That's
see what it is that they got involved.
That's not always possible.
It is possible because, maybe it's not always possible, but there are ways to assess their true thrust. Particularly when they with the kind of, you know, work that they do.
Okay.
You know, a leader should solve problems. That's the first thing for me. He got to be able to bring solutions.
Right.
He got to be able to solve.
I said that, but you said you don't agree with what
I
said.
No, but you didn't put it down. Okay, all right. You did. It was number four. Okay. You did say that. All right. They got to be able to solve problems. And, you know, these people who have been coming forward of late, you know, have come from environments where that kind of thinking is not necessarily what they do in order to make a living. You see,
I would give you a good example of seeing talent and pulling it. A couple of years ago in the 90s, there was a gentleman, actually this was shared with me by former Prime Minister Mr. Arthur, and he said he looked around when, just in 94, just around election time, he looked around, and wanted, you know, trying to find some people. And there were some particular qualities he was looking for, not necessarily those that I would have shared, but people who had track records and persons who had done stuff. And he actually went to Mr. Farley, Reginald Farley, who had spent at that time, 18 months at the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry as executive director, and encouraged him to come and become a minister of government in his party. But he looked at what Mr. Farley had done. He was a good advocate. He was articulate. He was already pronouncing on matters relative to the economy. He understood industry and industrial policy, etc.
Oh, he did?
He brought him to the fore.
He's an accountant.
That his track record helped him, and he did a pretty good job in the position. So you don't just put a leader, but you also support the leader so that the leader has that enabling environment within the realm of whatever delivery he or she has. So important.
I'm not a fan of Co Williams. I'm not a fan of Co Williams. But but nobody's all bad. They come with something to the fore that, you know, that it tickles a nerve or something, and you don't ever forget it. And he did say many, many years ago, when he was in short pass, that he is not the brightest person in his team, but he surrounds himself with people who could actually Busy is probably the best person in his team, because he can't pick him. But
he says he hires persons who are more intelligent than he is.
Who are smarter than him, right? That is something that rings true. If it is possible that you can afford these people, well, by all means, do it. Mm-hmm. But you really think that happens in a place like the Westminster system, when the Prime Minister is the king of the show? And his say is the last, you know?
In our instance, we've only had male prime ministers. But they have surrounded themselves. We've had good leaders over the years, you know.
I judged Tom Annos incorrectly, because I heard him as an argument with the Prime Minister of Guyana at the time, Forbes Burnham.
Forbes, yes.
When I heard that little discussion between two of them, I said, he made Tom Annos look like a total idiot. Mm. And I've always held that opinion until very recently when I heard his track record, and I realized that the man really was arguably the best of all the Prime Ministers that we have had. But only based on the things that he has done.
And what you learned from that, not to jump to conclusions?
Well, not based on what people say. If you can't argue, I mean, Burnham was a... You can outthought Burnham. You can outthink him. He's extremely clever with the way he thought. Mm-hmm. His thought processes and stuff. And Tom Williams was Tom Annos was no match for him. Mm-hmm. But in terms of his ability to implement things, even though I'm not talking about Tom. I'm sorry. I done because I'm not. That's very political stuff. What I would like to say, is that the world is not. The world might be crying out for good leaders, but what this one idiot here in this chair right now is crying out for is a fourth estate. A more enlightened electorate.
A
fourth estate, one that actually does work. People that actually dig in there and bring information that people would need to know before they make stupid decisions at the poll. They only got 1 or 2 minutes every 5 years to make that decision. Mm-hmm. And it has to be the most informed decision that there is available. Mm-hmm. You can't go out there believing that, okay, what one side says about the other is the truth, or what the other side says about the first is the truth. Mm-hmm. And a man makes some stupid comment about 2 days ago saying, I like this particular candidate. This person is a very good person, but this person is an independent, so I can't vote for that person. Mm-hmm. Because independence don't work. You know, the problem isn't the 2 minutes, is that you can make a difference. Mm-hmm. You can make a difference in that 2 minutes. And the difference doesn't come from sticking with the established parties. If you had a fourth estate and you recognize what the established parties were really all about, they wouldn't even be in office anymore.
So you're suggesting that our fourth estate is not pulling its full weight.
I'm saying that we don't even have a fourth estate, to be honest with you. We don't.
What?
We don't. The truth is that the major parties are very well funded. And the bulk of that funding goes into the media houses that won't pay 20 and 30 ads, you know, stuff. I mean, because they are in the business of making money. Mm-hmm. Oh, when you hear Peter Wickham and George Bell and those guys, Dr. Bell and those guys say political parties are in business to win elections, you want to know about what they're winning it for. What is the end game? What is the end game? It never made sense to me.
To hold power.
Even that is not the end game, because there has to be something. Yeah, to hold power. We're all power hungry. That's
or to, or to influence policy and to help the youth, or to make sure we have a better country.
All that is part of winning the game, because they will tell you whatever you need to hear in order to win. The idea is to win. Mm-hmm. And even if you put a person up there saying, John, that person must have the best possible chance of winning. It's not about Khan Abed. Because he's popular, it's because he think that the piece is the best person to win that seat. You know, it's not about Marie Agar, you bring back a man from Canada. These things happen not because of the people or what they want. They put people in there because they got the best chance of winning. They don't give a tale what the people do, whether or not they're honest or not. And why is that so? Because the established parties attract big money. You're talking millions of dollars every campaign, every 5 years. Where does the money come from? Why is it so important to win, and for who? Is it important to win? The people that put money in want to lose it. They make hedge and put some there and put more across there because they got a better chance of that set winning as opposed to this set. And that's what the game is about. Winning because there are people who put money behind it, and with that money, they must come a return of some kind of favor. That is what the politics of this party world is.
And you don't think the lobby is big enough?
Sorry?
Is the lobby big enough?
The lobby? How do you mean the lobby?
The same money. If I give you money, I want something. If I give you
money
to fund a party.
But I'm just wondering, if I put $5,000 behind one of these parties, I will get something for it. I'm just wondering if there's a threshold beyond which you will get something. Mm-hmm. And if you don't reach that threshold, you're just putting money in. I'm just wondering,
you will have to talk to the particular parties and see what their policies are, whether or not.
No, but even if there was a policy, you think that would really be something that they would advertise? Seriously.
It depends. Huh? It depends. If a man just wants to buy a podium and have a few microphones and the 5,000 would facilitate that, then sure.
Oh, yes. But if he does that and he attracts 20 people and some other group comes now with their $100,000 campaign, I got an artist to sing on the stage with flags about the place and T-shirts and posters up for the past 2 and 3 weeks, something that easily costs $250,000 or something like that to get implemented, who are the people going to flock to? Because it's all about optics. What are you prepared to do all of this spending just because of optics? Because, come on, it is a business. The established parties are involved with the business of politics. It is a big money game.
Okay.
It does not involve the well-being of citizens. They may get a little piece out of it, but at the end of the day, it is a big money game. And if there was a fourth estate in truth, that would be so crystal clear. The major parties will not even have a chance of winning an election vote here as in Antigua. Wouldn't even have a chance because the independents really don't have that kind of money. When the independent come and tell you something, I mean to do this, but he ain't got another choice, because that's exactly what they mean. It's not a matter of, I got big backers behind me, so I'm prepared to tell you whatever you want here just because my big backers expect me to win this election. It has everything to do with the fact that I'm independent, I ain't got no money, I ain't gonna say to you what I think, and because when I get into parliament, I will be doing exactly that. I'm not representing anybody other than the people who vote for me, and that is what independents do. That's what new parties do, and it's about time you people wake the hell up and recognize that democracy has been usurped. And it will continue to be that way if you continue to stick with the damn established parties. You have to say sometime at some point, goodbye, thank you very much for all that you've done. There's no more need for you. Let's let democracy grow. Okay. Let it breathe. Let's deal with the options that we have available. 5 years ago, we didn't have the options. So a lot of people decide, well, I just ain't voting no more. But you got options now. They got 42% and they vote last time. Maybe they'll come this time and vote. Vote new. That's all I say. I keep voting you because the right group will eventually come along. But if you keep dissing them, like Dennis Johnson, then let's come there and tell people, what is this? Whistleblower. Whistleblower will never work. You give Dennis Johnson any new idea, he'll diss it because he is convinced, perhaps, that the established parties will one day work. You cannot continue doing the same thing over and over and over again and expect finally to get a different result.
Different results. Thank you very much. I have a caller here, WhatsApper, who says to you that the UPP, which is the party that you back, said that the UPP will be an established party in 20 years. And then would you call them falling into the same bad habits, or would you still be supporting them? That was just a question. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You are on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Hello.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Mm-hmm. You hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Right. Now, I was here for quite some time, so I hope by the news will be on the sphere just now that I will get enough time to expand what I have to say as far as my contribution is concerned, if the news do come. Now, I listen to the program for the entire week, apart from Tuesdays, because I make a commitment not to listen on Tuesdays.
Well, you won't hear the politicians?
No, I prefer hear Peter on his slot, but I don't want to discuss that.
Okay.
Now, I was listening really to hear if anyone, because we have some serious problems in this country, and I find people spend more time speaking about people's sexual lives and prostitution and so on as far as lesbianism and homosexuality and everything else is concerned, rather than trying to discuss some of these pressing issues that's facing us right now in this country. And indeed, I'm very concerned. Now, the issue I'm really concerned about, which I thought I would have heard mentioned during the period of time over a week, is what's happening right now in the sugar industry in this country. And I can recall, I will take you this place first before you go further, that the spokespersons for the small farmers or the private farmers, I think he's a Mr. Beffel, I don't remember his full name.
Yes.
he mentioned something along the line that there was some money allocated for the private farmers. I think they, speaking of the correction, they had a drawdown. But then when they went to receive the remainder of the funds, the money was moved or channeled somewhere else as far as he was told by someone. And up to this point in time, those private farmers have not received one single cent after. Mm-hmm. Apart from the thousands of dollars that was owed over the previous years to these farmers. And going to what's happening at this present moment, I would have thought that at least we would have heard something from the Minister of Agriculture concerning this. Because I don't think it's fair to the private farmers, especially where you have a situation like this, whereby you have a Minister of Agriculture who wouldn't even offer them or at least grace them with some sort of comment about what's really happening mm-hmm. concerning the industry. And what was really annoying to me, especially, is to see now that this country...
I'm going to have to wrap you here and we will come right back.
Right, exactly. Thanks.
This is Don't Embrace That. It is now 12:46. This is Don't Embrace That. You are on the air.
Yeah, hello. I'm still here.
Good afternoon again.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm still here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was saying to you that in spite of all that is happening right now in the sugar industry mm-hmm. or the harvesting, we are not hearing anything from the Minister of Agriculture, and I don't think that that should be accepted. I think the farmers need to hear him. He needs to come out and say something as far as this problem, these problems are concerned. Mm-hmm. I can remember clearly that there was a time set for the crop to begin, and it was in February to say it was starting in February, and then you get another release whereby
some
it
delays.
Was not.
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah.
There have been then some delays because of pending
because
funding.
Because of the rain, and the rain too, the rain, that's mm-hmm. the fields were wet, so mm-hmm. that's one of the delays I had as well. Mm-hmm. But then since then, after that, now we are hearing now that the crop would not be started until the farmers receive their money from the funds that was supposed to be allocated to them. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm really concerned about? Mm-hmm. Is the fact that we have a tourism industry. And in spite of all the numbers that we find the Minister of Tourism come and bandy about as far as arrivals is concerned, we are not seeing anything tangible as far as foreign exchange in this country is concerned. And yet you have a crop now who could add the sugar crop where you could bring in some foreign exchange. And yet it's being sidelined. There's no sort of interest shown by this government and the Minister of Agriculture concerning sugar crop. And there's much needed for a nation as Barbados could do well with.
I was reading a study just only on Tuesday. Yes. And it was talking about the real value that tourism brings to a number of the economies. And it was actually, I had thought it was between 20-30%. They said the repatriation of profits is much lower, or put it the other way, the more profits go out than the amount of revenue that comes in. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about the real impact, because it also has an impact on the physical plant, on the country, on jobs, on employment, and a couple other things. And when they do the takeout versus the put in, they say that it is between 10-15% of value add that comes to the country, more so than we had thought it to be, even a larger figure. It was a very interesting study.
You know, it showed me how much that this government valued tourism as far to compare with agriculture. Because after we had a situation that is faced in the tourism industry this morning, ma'am, I believe that it will rectify in matters of minutes or hours. But yet they just close a blind eye to the kind of farmers of this country. And you know, I will sum up by telling you this. You know what this reminds me of? You can remember the passing of the former Prime Minister David Thompson. We had a long period of lull in this country where this country seems as though it was on autopilot. Nothing really was happening. And this 90-day period now with the Prime Minister has now taken this country and reminded me of such a situation. Because you are not hearing anything as far as the government is concerned. Exactly.
We were sad.
What's it sad? I think we are sad now, yeah? Everything serious about the M was that period. Honestly.
Many would argue that they agree with you.
Yeah, it's more sad. But what I'm saying to you, that when I see these sort of salaries that these ministers of the government will still be drawing, you know me, and yet we are not hearing one single word from them, I wonder why we had to go through this period now in 90-day period.
You are part of the system. Did you vote at the last election?
Yeah, I did.
Right. Just if you didn't, I would probably have gone on, but you didn't. You did, so.
Yeah, I did vote. Okay. You know, but I don't think we should accept this sort of behavior from the Minister of Agriculture. He needs to come and tell us if he's still acting as a minister or if he withdraw himself because of the differences he have with the position the Prime Minister has taken. I know why he said that. So I don't know if he's still acting in the position of minister. So we need to find out that as well.
I think the minister is still acting as a minister. And I mean, I don't think he's done anything different. We haven't heard any announcements or anything.
But, you know, but I am concerned, to be honest with you. And I think there's something that we should be discussing even more concerned as far as this is concerned. Because it's a serious matter. We need foreign exchange in this country and sugar industry, sugar foreign exchange. We get lots of foreign exchange. It may not be like previous years, but we need it.
Okay.
And something needs to be done. I close by saying thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Sugar, an important. I remember when we did some history, sugar being a, it was called King Sugar. Barbados was the country that persons looked to throughout the globe for the sugar production and export and a number of things. This is a couple hundred years after. We are a different society, a different country, post-independence, etc. We probably never would have thought, the leaders of that day never would have thought of where we would have been today, where we are today. Totally different scenario, different setup. No more monocrop. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Ms. Gill.
Good afternoon, sir.
Very well. How are you today?
Doing well, thanks.
Right. I am referring to a very early call in the program, and you made a statement which I do agree with, but I'm going to give you some background from a historical point. This is to do with whether Al-Barr was the leader of the party or not. And then you had a subsequent caller who justified and substantiated that he was. Your first caller said that he has a document which proved the caller of the day in front to be wrong. Now, I have in my possession, and I'm going to give you, Ms. Gill, you were perfectly right when you said that writers write different. But I'm giving you information from the 30th anniversary booklet of the Democratic Labour Party. You hear what it said?
Yes.
30th anniversary, which is in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
And as written under the heading, How It Got Started, which gives you the background of how the Democratic Labour Party got started. And then it went on to the period of 1955 to 1961.
Okay.
And it did establish there, which this document can be available for you to read, to prove that at the time, the chairman of the party was Charlie Booms, who eventually retired because of health, died after, and eventually J.T. Banker took over the leadership of the opposition and chairman of the party. It went on to say, which I can read for you, but I'm only justifying a point, which following the death of Mr. Charlie Booms in 1959, Mr. Al-Barr was elected chairman, and his capacity led the party into momentous general election of 1961. The following were the party's candidates, and it has a listing of the candidates then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that to say this. The DLP is not the same DLP of 60 years ago. Because if you read what they said in that document on the formation of the party, mm-hmm. and you read the objectives of the party then, and you compare what is happening now, then you would say then that truly, the late Earl Walton Barrow must be somehow not contented with what is happening. For example, one of the first three clauses in the Constitution and rules of the Democratic Labour Party read as follows, and I'm going to give you object number three. The object of the party are to secure for people of Barbados and the Caribbean full enjoyment of their democratic liberties. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But then it went on to raise the standard of living and improve the quality of life of the people of Barbados and to create the greatest measure of social betterment by sound management of the financial and economic resources of Barbados. But this is the sea lane to secure and maintain honesty and responsibility in public life and to root out every constitutional means graft on corruption wherever it may exist. And I say that to say this, that 60 years after...
That's an awesome thesis.
Yeah, and this is the own document. This is a contradiction of what was 60 years ago and what is really happening today.
So that's not happening today, like based on what you're saying, that's what you're suggesting.
Completely different.
So the objects of the party in 1959...
Yeah, to secure and maintain honesty and responsibility in public life. And to root out every constitutional means of graft, corruption, wherever maybe it may exist. Now, all of us as Barbadians know that that part might have meant well then. Yeah. All of us know at somewhere along the line that as far as the 60 years after, you know, and I want to express the fact that, that in those days there were no party representatives. Like what you have now, constituencies, members. In those days, when he was elected, he was elected by the other members of the then newly formed party, which in 1971, the first time we had constituency branches in Barbados. So when you see what is repeated here in St. John now, where someone is fostered on the people, because these were people who selected him. Nothing wrong with that. But his history repeats itself. So when one picks up, being honest with you, Miss Gale, I love to read. I have documents. I could even give you, there's a statement going around which says that Al Bauer was responsible for the Hilton. I can advise anybody to get the Advocate of January the 4th, 1992. In Winter Crawford's own words, in his own writing, how the Hilton was started. That's it. And it tells you exactly how the Hilton was started, who was responsible for the Hilton. And this is in the writer's own words. So when I hear people saying that Bauer is responsible for the Hilton, it came at independence, but he did not negotiate the Hilton. He did not negotiate the Hilton. The person that negotiated the Hilton was a man called Winter Crawford. So when one picks up the phone and call a calling point and just try to establish that they're correct, you were perfectly right, Miss Gale, because there are documents that contradict each other. Am I wrong or right?
In history, yes. You get different perspectives. Let's look at the Murphy, Martin, Luke, and John. There's some elements in there. They all talk about the scenario surrounding Jesus's life, but yet they have different accounts. Not that they're contradictory, but they have different accounts.
6 years after, Bauer's own words. And he said, I will not allow a small minority of people, unscrupulous business persons, to exploit the following citizens of Barbados. You understand what the honest man said then, back then, that he will not.
So I'm waiting for you to get to your critical point, because I'm gathering that you're saying that these objects of the party are not being necessarily upheld at this point. That's what I'm gathering you to say.
I'm saying that because it's in their own writing. It's in their own formation of what they want it to be. And when one establishes, that the two parties are the same, they're not the same. There's a difference. I could go on and further, but I am not here this morning to present a case for. I just dealing with your first or second caller this morning who tried to mislead what was said yesterday. And then your third caller came in and justified. I was 21 years then, so I know what I'm speaking about. The other gentleman who called you told you his age. So when someone tells you that they were 10 years old at the time, nothing is wrong with that. Because people 10 years at that time were at least active, but I was involved.
And for me, question for you.
Yeah.
Do you know that you can start any organization with certain objects and a particular vision, given the scenario at the time, and then things change?
I do agree. But I'm also saying to you, if things change for the betterment, you feel proud of transforming it. If things change to the worse and you don't correct it, it continues to go downhill, until it's corrected. And I'm saying that we have found a situation where we are shouting waves as far as a plan that we initiated back on the 27th of April, 1955. And we're shouting, yes, nothing is wrong with that. But there have to be somewhere along the line that people understand exactly 6 years after. That's all I'm saying to you this morning. Mm-hmm. 6 years after, it's not the same. So when you talk about people electing a candidate to St. John, then obvious, somewhere along the line, this is 6 years after. There's no imagery as far as Barry is concerned there in St. John anymore. What is happening is that he himself said that he will someday realize that one of their own will come to take the parish forward. So for us to hear this morning a contradiction of a period of time, I do, Miss Gale, I love documents. I have documents. I can put this document in your hand, but I will not allow it because I
believe you started out by saying you can give me this document, or you're saying you're not allowed.
Hold on. I'm telling you where you can get it.
Give me the
name. It is the 30th anniversary booklet.
Oh, I have that written down. Your anniversary booklet at the Democratic Labour Party.
It is written with the contents, the formation of the Democratic Labour Party, and mm-hmm. those persons who played a major role in the birth and the existence of the Democratic Labour Party. I could also tell you to look at their document of the document of the 50th anniversary, which was in 2005, and there are full contradictions of the present leader today of statements he made to the DLP at the 50th anniversary conference. And if you read what he said then, as what is happening now, then there is no need to entertain the Democratic Labour Party.
I heard you. I thank you for your discussion. Could you share then with me the objects of the party that you...
I read earlier.
You are a member of, or that you support.
Hold on. Let's be frank. I don't deny this, right?
Okay.
I was a member of the DLP. I broke with the DLP in 1972. Mm-hmm. No regrets whatsoever. I believe that somewhere along the line that if you are into politics, there are certain points of the political life of Barbados that you have to hold on to and either prove yourself wrong or prove yourself right. Yes, I will share the document with you. I'm certain the document is available other places, but the other gentleman said he will bring a document to the station. I am not contradicting his document. I am saying that I also have a document written.
Yes, I heard you. I heard all that you said. I'm just asking you.
You
spent a lot of time on the objects of the Democratic Labour Party for which you do not support.
Right.
And I'm asking you to share with me what are the objects of the Barbados Labour Party, given that one of our previous callers talked about there not being a significant difference. Actually, he asked the question, what was the fundamental difference between the Democratic Labour Party and the Barbados Labour Party? Whether it is philosophically, what is it? So I'm asking you, what are the objects of the party that you support?
The Barbados Labour Party was accused of...
No, not what they were accused of. You tell me what are the objects of
the
party.
The objects of it, a fair and equal life and a better life for all.
Mm-hmm.
Better life for all. A-double-L. Not a minority coup, not a small minority of people... Better life for all. And you and I would have realized that if you read the history of politics through the years in Barbados, you realize that somewhere along the line that there are certain historians of this country who refused to write the true facts of the history of Barbados through the 30s and through the 40s, because when they got to the part of Sir Grantley Adams, they forgot exactly his contribution to Barbados. So truthfully, we saw one history of Barbados, and that is the history pre-independence of Walton Bar and the Democratic League. And this is distorting the history of the country. Now, Crawford was not a member. Crawford joined the Democratic Labour Party, but Crawford was a member of the Congress Party. There were two people who went forward, and that was Crawford and Talman. Mm-hmm. Who went forward as members of the Congress Party for the Democratic Labour Party when they won the government in 1961. Eventually, there was a break between Crawford and the Democratic Labour Party, and they never, ever, ever give the man his credit for the things that he introduced to the party, and that was, even though to name the wrong vote after him, it was never. So I'm showing you the distance between one and the other.
So question for you, the role that Crawford played in 1961 when the party went into, when Barry became premier, Crawford was not chairman of the party at the time?
No, the document will show that.
Okay.
Right. I am saying that Crawford did a magnificent job in terms of even the. It is alleged that the manifesto or the suggestions of 1961 was of Crawford's writing.
I noticed that you're spending a little bit of time on the Democratic Labour Party and you're not talking much about the Barnett Labour Party.
No, you know what I'm spending time? Mm-hmm. I am differentiating one against the other. I'm saying that the Barbados Labour Party is by far the superior party.
You didn't say that? You're now saying that?
No.
You're spending a lot of time on the Democratic Labour Party.
Well, I had to disadvantage them to prove a point. And you asked me what
you don't have to.
No, hold on. The better things are the scale of the Barbados, of the Democratic Labour Party, as far as the Barbados Labour Party is concerned, is there to see. All the Education Act was introduced by the Barbados Labour Party.
I didn't ask you what the party did, you know. You took pains to share with me four of the main objects of the Democratic Labour Party.
Yeah.
And for completeness, I asked you to share with me what are the main objects of the Barbados Labour Party. And then you went on to Mr. Crawford.
All right, let me give you three of them. We are beneficiaries now of the formation of what we call organized workers, the union. Whether it be the Barbados Workers Union, whether it be the NUPW, whatever. Out of the belly of the Barbados Labour Party, there was the formation of a movement for workers in this country. Mm-hmm. In terms of education, there was a time in this country when certain two families could not work in the system. Husband and wife could not work in the same education system. We have seen the transformation of the change. We have seen it. The Bridgetown Port, the movement towards making Barbados what we consider a place to stop within the region. The Grantley Adams, not the Grantley, Sevier Airport. All of these things, this is the Queen Elizabeth Hospital.
So these are all part of the vision of fair and equal life for all.
Coming out of the armpit of the leadership of the Barbados Labour Party.
Okay.
As far back as 1944.
Okay.
As far back as, and I'm very annoyed when people try to denounce the certain historical aspects of Barbados when it comes to the political life of Barbados. And if the political life, there are certain people who are politicians who does not even understand and read the background of why they're involved in politics. And I think that if they knew why they're involved in politics, and I think if they knew and shared the backgrounds of the political life of Barbados, then they would actually choose a party, whether it be left or right. And if you read the memoirs of Winter Crawford. If you read the documents as presented over the years, Mr. Gales, there's only one thing that you could understand. I heard a former member of the Barbados Labour Party put in a case the way he should have 500 votes in his name in St. John. Truthfully, when he ran, he has seemed to have forgotten that he carried a program to St. John of the achievements of the Barbados Labour Party in St. John. The very first station which he spoke in front of the night was one of the achievements. Society school.
We're dealing with objects.
Objects.
I have one thing to share with you. Someone says you don't need to blow out someone else's candle to make yours burn brighter. And that goes back to the first thing you commented on when you said you were trying to discredit to some extent, for lack of a better word.
Miss Gale, I'd like to be fair with you. Let me start as I'm saying. People in this country seem to want to blow out the candle of the Barbados Labour Party. Let me put that straight.
Robert, what people do, I specifically asked you to share yours on a particular subject, and you went on to talk about something else, and I said to you, no, we're not going there. And your reason for that was because you wanted to blow the other one's candle. Here from the WhatsApper is saying to you, which is essentially what I said, not to blow that person's candle in order to get yours brighter.
Miss Gale, I want to close by saying this, right?
Yes.
If the historians of this country who had political leanings were honest to the political history of Barbados, mm-hmm. and they know who they are, mm-hmm. then these historians who wrote in contradiction.
Okay.
And they have not written the truth. They destroyed Hoyer's book. They destroyed several things because they want to project a particular image. And I said to Barbados mm-hmm. that as far as Barbados is concerned, God is not sleeping. And this election is divine intervention because we will see a transformation of a country that must move forward.